What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical bill expert, finding savings can seem impossible. Well, HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. So start saving with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, there's a light in the darkness of everybody's life. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And today we wanted to talk a bit about tractor beams, as it turns out.
Tractor beams.
Yeah, tractor beams,
So we're talking about science fiction today.
No. That'll be a later podcast. Right now we're talking about science fact. Science fact. Factual
what?
Tractor beams.
Yeah, tractor beams are a real thing.
Yeah, using...
Fact, like F-A-K-T, fact.
Exactly like F-A-K-T.
So you're telling me you're telling me there are real tractor beams
the world. It's amazing to me that you don't know this, because you wrote the script for that particular episode and I've already recorded it. But yes, there are. Do you just not believe your own research?
We're playing a little fantasy game
here,
Jonathan.
I'm sorry. I missed out.
What? Tractor beams? Well, I'll admit that even though I did write a script about it, it's still blowing my mind.
Well, you know what? It blows my mind too, because you're sitting there talking about a phenomena that is incredibly counterintuitive.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, when we see it in Star Trek, it looks like this beam of light is pulling something towards it. And how does that work? Because light pushes on stuff.
Right. And we actually are talking about light.
I don't want to nerd out on you, but did you say Star Trek or Star Wars?
I said Star Trek.
Oh, then you're right. You're totally right. You're totally right. I'm so sorry. I thought you said Star Wars and I was going to be, you don't see anything. Okay. You just feel it. You're just being pulled in. Right? They got us locked in.
That's true. Yeah. They got us locked in on the tractor beam. You don't see anything until Obi-Wan is right there over at the tractor beam controls that are conveniently located next to the enormous pit.
That big beam going up and down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll save that for the next podcast.
Sure,
the sci-fi stuff.
Let's stick with science fact.
Just let it be known. Okay. For the one person in the world who doesn't know what a tractor beam from science fiction is, it's a force that pulls you toward it.
Right. So In science fiction, it's often used for a ship to be guided into the docking bay of some other vessel or spaceport, or it's some way of capturing another object peacefully without blowing it to smithereens.
And yeah. kind of grabbing it, taking it with you.
Yeah. yeah, yeah. So
it's kind of like a like a beam winch, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. If you don't want the equivalent of having to fire out grappling hooks from the side of your spaceship so that you can pull some other spaceship in so you can board it and be space pirates, then you need some sort of electronic, electromagnetic version of that. And tractor beams tends to be the go-to, magical thing that we talk about to have this happen. And as it turns out, we actually have developed a type of tractor beam, a couple of different types of tractor beams, but they're on a very small scale and they use light.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
They use light.
They use light.
So they can shine light and pull something toward the light source.
Which is incredibly counterintuitive. Like you were saying, Lauren, I mean, that light is something that pushes.
Right. It has momentum. It behaves as both a particle and a wave.
Yeah.
I mean, even that's not totally intuitive, right? We should stop and some people might be going, wait a minute, what? Light pushes?
Yeah, it does. It does have momentum. It has a relativistic mass, which mostly means that it has a mass that works out in math, if not in what we would consider real life situations, but it does have momentum. It can press against something.
Yeah, you'd call this, the term is radiation pressure. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you imagine the sun, it's got rays coming out of it in all directions. It's also got solar wind. So you can understand why solar wind would push because that's massive particles. Right,
right.
So
blasting particles out into space.
Mm-hmm. So if you have something like a solar sail, which is a spaceship that's designed to ride the force of the sun outward from the solar system, that's taking some of the force from that solar wind, those massive particles coming out. But some of the force pushing it is just it's light.
Yeah, it's photons. It's just photons pressing against that solar sail. And because you're not dealing with gravity in any appreciable sense, mm-hmm. once you get out into interplanetary space, as long as you're not getting too close to any particular large body, then you can use that to accelerate your spacecraft and travel and use that as a propulsion force. In fact, that's one of the ones that scientists have proposed as a potential propulsion force once we're building spacecraft in space.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you don't even have to look at a hypothetical spacecraft to see the force of radiation pressure in our solar system, right?
Right.
You can look at like a comet.
Right. Comets' tails always point away from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That ion tail is always going to be pointing away. And that's because of this pressure that we're talking about. So
that's Kepler discovered that, by the way, which comes up a lot in a lot of these articles.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Yeah.
Kepler was a smart cat, let me tell you. So we're getting into not everyone.
I think he was a smart human being, but.
Yeah. Well, Schrodinger had a smart cat. Only half the time. So anyway, the whole point of this is that if you're thinking about an energy that has a pressure, like it's pressing against something, how could that then draw an object toward the source of that pressure? I mean, that is very much counterintuitive.
Oh, right. And the thing is that physicists have figured out ways of getting around this so that what's really happening is the light is pushing on objects from behind and thereby making the appearance that it's pulling that object towards the source.
Right. So really what's happening is that there's some sort of pressure building on the backside of an object in relation to where the source of light is. So that pressure on the back is pushing it toward that light source. It's not truly pulling. Like, it's not like if I grab Joe and then just started to pull him toward me. That would be one thing. But this is more like I signal to you, Lauren.
And I push Joe and towards you.
By the way, this happens constantly in our podcast. And I meant to bring that up earlier.
Very violent.
Suggest that we not do that. But really, I guess it's a discussion for another
time. Come on, guys. The examples you're using are different in like 18 ways. I want to see the proof. What does this really look like in the lab? What are they doing?
All right. Well, there's a couple of different ways that scientists have looked into using light to pull objects. First of all, we should say that for a couple of decades now, scientists have been using light to immobilize tiny, tiny, tiny objects.
Immobilize and wiggle.
Right. So they're
Ooh.
Not they're,
controlledly wiggle.
Right.
Wow.
So in this case, you're using light.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, you're using light. It's not drawing it toward the source of light. It's just there to either move something laterally, or you're just immobilizing something. This is really important if you're dealing with really, really, really tiny objects, like in organic chemistry or any kind of biomedical research. Mm-hmm. You would need to be able to isolate and immobilize these tiny, tiny particles.
I imagine we're talking about like the microscale, nanoscale. Is
yeah.
that it?
Yeah. Microscale and nanoscale is really what we're talking about. Now, keep in mind that so a nanometer is 1/1000th of a meter. A micrometer is 1/1000000th. So we're talking between a few hundred nanometers to a couple of microns in size. Now, one of the ways that scientists have used is relying on something called a Bessel beam, which is a very peculiar type of light.
Yeah, a Bessel beam. If you see a Bessel beam shined against a wall, you would probably see something that looks like a target. It's like a bullseye with concentric circles coming mm-hmm. out. That's the way I've seen it in all the videos and images I've seen online. But the essential thing about a Bessel beam is that it's non-refractive, right? So it stays focused over a really long distance.
Right.
And
so if you're using a laser beam, we think of laser beams as being really, really concentrated beams of light that don't tend to diffuse, but they do over great distances, whereas a Bessel mm-hmm. beam maintains that coherence.
Yeah, and the other really weird and kind of interesting thing about a Bessel beam is that, if I'm correct, I think it reforms after passing over an object, right?
Right, right. It's a series of concentric circles of light that are formed around a single dot, and that center point is created by the light from the concentric circles. So it can reform when it encounters something in its path because it's not entirely being covered. Did that
I
make
see.
Any sense?
So some
oh,
of the,
no,
so
I
some
see
of
what
the,
you're
so
yeah.
I see. So some of the outer circle is getting around that object and therefore can reform that dot part on the backside of that object.
Right.
That's
so,
really cool.
So it's not the same thing as if it were to encounter, say, an enormous wall. It's more like if it had a smaller object that would normally block that little dot, but some of that concentric circle gets around.
Some
and
of the outer bits
reform.
Get around and
right.
can reform behind
so,
it.
So the interesting thing awesome. Here is that you've got a laser beam that for very tiny objects is uninterruptible. Like it'll if you were to interrupt that light, it reforms on the other side. It almost seems like magic when you think about it, because it's like you've blocked off that little dot from the source, and yet it still reappears on the other side of the object.
So if a beam of light can reform on the other side of an object, I wonder if there's a way to time it so that when the beam hits the object, it's at a low energy in its wavelength, and when it reforms on the back of the object, it's at a high energy.
Well, gosh, Joe, it's almost like you read that script you wrote, because in fact, that's exactly what scientists have managed to do. They've managed to...
Is that how it works?
Exactly, yeah.
well, with two of these Bessel beams.
Right,
when you,
there's
when
two
you,
of
them. Yeah, yeah. When you bend two of them together and kind of focus them correctly...
Right, right. What happens is you create a greater amount of pressure on the backside of this tiny, tiny object. Remember, we're talking about on the micro scale here. Then you can create enough force to push it toward what is the source of that light. So it's exactly what you said, Joe. You've got a lower amount of pressure on the front side and a greater amount on the backside, and that's what creates this movement. So this is one way that scientists have discovered where you can actually use light to move objects. Now, keep in mind, this is tiny, tiny scale. We'll get into scalability issues. I know, Joe, you're chomping at the bit to talk about that. But we have another unusual and exotic way of using light to manipulate objects. And in fact, the second method is incredibly technical, and we're really just going to give an overview of it, because to go into great detail would, one, require that we'd actually bring someone in who is a
particle physicist?
A particle physicist, because
yeah.
that's
or
how complex
you might
it
say
gets.
An optical physicist.
Yeah,
right?
Could
sure.
be. Right? Yeah, photons are particles. Or we could
can't wait for this fist fight later.
Yeah. Geek fight. Or we can, you know, so we'd have to either bring in an expert, or we would spend a lot of time gesticulating wildly in an audio podcast room, which does not translate so well in audio format.
It's great. Yeah, it would be fine for us, but y'all listening might be a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
So
we'll do our best here.
Right.
To relate.
So let's talk sure. about this. So this is from some researchers who are working out of both Scotland and the Czech Republic. It's kind of it's a consortium of scientists and engineers who are working on this.
And this was just first published in on January 20th, 2013. So this is really cutting edge.
Yes, this is really, really new and exciting stuff.
But it's also the closest thing to the sci-fi tractor beam that we've seen yet.
It is. And what's being used, they're using a Gaussian laser beam.
A linearly polarized Gaussian laser beam.
Yeah, polarization is referring to, if you think about the movements of a photon, they tend to move, generally speaking, this is really simplifying, but they tend to move in two planes, a horizontal plane and a vertical plane. Polarized light, you can polarize light in such a way so that it all moves within a single plane, and then you can manipulate that plane so that you are working with a very specific type of light. We actually use this in practically in 3D applications. If you have passive 3D glasses that are the polarized lenses, then those lenses are polarized in such a way to allow one type of light through the lens while blocking another type. This allows you to get two different types of light in, you know, one in each lens, so that your brain then combines the images that you're receiving into a single image that gives you that illusion of depth. Right? So it's tricking your brain into thinking that there's depth there when really you're just looking at two different flat images.
So, okay, but how do they use it move a little ball?
It all has to do with the geometry of the light. First of all, we should say what they are doing. They are moving tiny, tiny, tiny little balls.
These are little styrene spheres that are suspended in fluid. And I think one thing that's interesting is a lot of these tests, they seem to be dependent on the conditions, right? So,
right.
Like, we can move something this size in air, or we can move something this size in a vacuum, and in this case, they're talking about suspended in water.
Right. And this would obviously be something that would be interesting, again, in biomedical applications where you're talking about lots of different fluids and particles that you might want to be able to move around. One of the cool things about this is, depending upon the geometry of the light that they used, they could manipulate certain sized objects while leaving everything else alone. So you could be very specific and hone in on exactly the size of particle that you want to manipulate while ignoring all other particles.
Wow, I bet that makes a lot of people in medical labs salivate.
Yeah, because you're talking about sorting on an incredibly precise basis.
It's yeah,
very
it's like
exciting.
It's like a laser sifter.
Right,
yeah.
Right. What was really exciting to me about this research is that they said that under certain conditions, objects held by the beam would automatically rearrange themselves to make the pulse stronger.
Whoa.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means,
that's
but it's so
crazy.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, we're getting into Star Trek territory here with reversing the polarity.
Oh, you're like brainwashing the balls. you're like
I'm
teaching
going to just
them to
leave that alone.
So, well, polystyrene spheres, you're brainwashing them to do your bidding.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So these spheres tended to be, for this particular research project, were between about 410 nanometers to 1,000 nanometers or 1 micron in size. And
1,000 nanometers. That's huge.
To an atom, yes.
Yeah.
To us, it is incredibly tiny.
It's pretty big for being pulled by light, right?
Yeah. For being pushed around by photons. That's not bad at all.
Yeah, I can actually quote a little bit of this. So here's an example of how complex this gets, right? To the point where we would need to have a specialist in here to really explain in layman's terms what's going on. Here we go. The optical force originating from the Gaussian intensity profile normal distribution along the z-axis attracts the particles toward the center and so acts against both the pulling or the pushing forces, as it was explained in figures 2a, b, c of the main text. Therefore, if the beam is switched on or its polarization is changed, the pulling or pushing forces propel the particles to their new equilibrium positions established in the Gaussian beams. To develop an appropriate theoretical description of the geometry, we need to take into account not only the Gaussian beam intensity profile, dragging particles to the beam center, but also the influence of the scattered field reflected on the mirror back toward the particle.
This means that they were using a mirror to help create interference within this Gaussian beam. And Gaussian beams, we should say, are beams that are stronger in the center than they are at the outsides.
Mm-hmm. So again, it's similar to that Bessel beam approach where they were using two Bessel beams in order to interfere with one another and create that pressure. But in this case, you're using a beam to interfere with itself.
Yeah, one beam in a mirror.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's interesting that you might not have caught from that passage you read, but they can change how the beam interacts with the particles by messing with the polarity.
Right.
Right. So right. If you tweak the polarity of the beam, you could say push instead of pull.
Right. Yeah. So it gives you a lot of different options for manipulating these microscopic or smaller objects. Now, it's, you know, this lends itself to lots of different applications that we're just starting to kind of consider right now because we're still in the very much the early stages of developing this technology.
But you could hypothetically sort different kinds of particulates out of something that you didn't want in there. You could use it to sort diseased cells versus healthy cells,
right.
or bacteria versus healthy cells.
Right.
Yeah.
If the stuff you wanted to take out of a solution, whether it was within a person or in a some sort of chemical, whatever, as long as that stuff was of a very specific size that was different from all the stuff you wanted to leave in, this would be a great way of doing it because you would know automatically that your methodology was not going to pick up anything you didn't want. It was just going to concentrate on the stuff you wanted to remove. Because again, that geometry only allows this light to interact with particles of a specific size and it ignores everything else as far as the pulling is concerned.
You know, there's another good tangent on what these types of lasers can do in Tiny Town. They said the Bessel beam, so the one from the first study we talked about.
Right.
They said those are really cool for what's called optical injection.
So what is that?
Well, that's where you use a laser to stab a hole right in a cell, and that allows things that you're trying to put in the cell to flood in.
Gotcha. So if you wanted
without necessarily killing the cell.
Right. So if you're doing some medical research and you really needed to be able to manipulate cells on an individual basis and see what a particular type of medication perhaps might do. Or if you just need to study the cell and you need to insert some form of chemical so it will show up on whatever imaging technique you're using, then these could be very useful techniques.
Totally.
It's kind of interesting stuff. So Joe, let's talk a little bit about scaling this up. So we figured out that we can use light to pull stuff what we want toward us.
Uh-huh.
What if the stuff what we want is really big? Like, let's say it's not even that big. Let's say it's, I don't know, the size of a soccer ball or a football to our friends in Europe.
Or sized like a podcast host or something like that.
Don't bring me into this. I don't want to get burned up by your laser.
Yeah, part of the problem is, so immediately, of course, when this study came out, everybody is like, oh, yes, we've got tractor beams.
It is on now.
Yeah, we can reel in ships. We
don't have to worry about asteroids attacking the Earth because we can just use the tractor beam to reposition it.
Who needs a tether for spacewalking anymore, right? You know, you go outside for a stroll outside the International Space Station. You just take a walk. You get lost. And you're back home.
And it makes that noise, too, even in the reaches of space.
Nope. Part of the problem is that these beams require a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And if you were to scale them up so that they were powerful enough to move heavier objects, they'd be delivering more and more energy as you did that.
Right.
Which, of course, when it strikes the object, would turn into heat.
So you're essentially developing a thermal weapon as opposed to a tractor beam.
It'd be more like a blaster, if we want to stick with Star Wars.
Yeah. Or a phaser, if we're talking Star Trek.
How about like a Death Star planet killer weapon?
Something like that.
So instead of moving the asteroid, you've just delivered a huge amount of thermal energy, so now it's a really hot rock that's heading toward Earth.
Maybe they were really just trying to move Alderaan somewhere. Maybe they didn't want to destroy it.
I'm pretty sure Grand Moff Tarkin was pretty clear on his intentions.
And I don't even know. See, based on the scientists that I read, I don't even know if it's technically possible to pull things at a huge scale.
Sure, sure.
But I know that this heating up objection exists.
Right.
So you would destroy it in the process of pulling it, even if you could pull it.
So if you were a space station trying to pull a shuttle into dock, then you would suddenly have this molten slag coming toward your space station as opposed to, you know, that would be the best case scenario. right? Anyway, yeah. So that's why, even with this amazing breakthrough, and we don't mean to diminish it at all, it is phenomenal and really exciting stuff.
Yeah.
It does not mean that we are going to arrive at some sort of science fiction future where we are going to have these tractor beams in regular use, either here on Earth or in space on the macro scale.
One thing that I think is really interesting is it's come up multiple times now in this podcast is the place where they're really thinking the tractor beam is going to be useful is the small scale.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Inner space.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have even imagined that.
Yeah. But it's super awesome and interesting. It's just not the way that science fiction authors had envisioned it when they were first. And really, a lot of the stuff that science fiction authors create tend to be like placeholders. This idea of there's this one problem that you would face if you were out in space. How do we get around that? What kind of technology can we invent? So everything from artificial gravity to inertial dampeners to warp drive, things that help you get around what would otherwise be huge problems when you get into science fiction-y space exploration type situations. You have to invent these somewhat magical devices that would counteract fundamental issues that you would run into otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Tractor beams are just one example of that.
But those fundamental physics are still existent on the small scale and are what we are much more capable of working with here on Earth.
Yeah, yeah, and there's no reason to say that tractor beams themselves will always be impossible on a macro scale. They just won't be using lasers necessarily. We might be using something else. But before we dive into that, I think we should save that for a completely separate discussion. We're going to talk about the science fiction of tractor beams, how they've been used, and also some potential, science fiction-y kind of ways we might be able to attain that in the future, assuming that the math proves true and that some theoretical or rather hypothetical particles actually exist. But that's something we'll save for next time. So, guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Forward Thinking, please get in touch with us. Let us know what you think. Tell us what you think about the podcast. Tell us what you want us to cover in the future. Tell us what has you excited. You can get in touch with us via email. Our address is fwthinking@discovery.com. Or go to fwthinking.com. That's where we've got the blogs, the podcasts, we've got videos, we've got links to all of our social media. Join our conversation. Be part of the family. We are excited to hear from you, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.